Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 16, Episode 4. This week, we heard a wonderful conversation between Bob and Dr. Nikki Jackson from the Purdue University Center for Justice and Post-Exoneration Assistance. It was great to hear about the great work Dr. Jackson is doing, as well as the story of exoneree Timmy Donald. Today, I'm joined by Bob and Janet, and I'm looking forward to talking to them about this.
Yeah, that was an awesome day. Eric and I spent the whole day over there at the center. Also, kudos to you, Zach. One take on the name of the center. Well played, sir.
I know, but I almost said Timmy McDonald instead of Timmy Donald.
So. But we were so close.
I was so close to one take on the
but
way
But they
through.
Don't know that because Erica fixed that already. Oh. But no, it was really, Eric and I, we got up in the morning and headed over there, over to Hammond, which is about a little over an hour away from us, and spent the whole day. Spent most of the day going over a case that's going to be a potential case that we're going to be covering for our next season 17. It's a really good case. I mean, we went over all the ins and outs of it. We looked at some evidence, went through some of the trial transcripts and crime scene photos and stuff. I mean, it's a big case. It's a fascinating case. I actually have, by the time you hear this, this will have already happened, but on Wednesday this week, I have a Zoom meeting scheduled with some attorneys. And we're trying to decide if we are for sure going to be doing this case or not. But I'm hoping we do. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a case that justice definitely was not served. And I think that we can hopefully do what we do and change that. But yeah, it was cool seeing the center and how things work. It was really cool meeting Tim. I don't know. Dr. Jackson referred to him always as Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
But when I walked into the room and he introduced himself to me, he introduced to me as Tim. So if you hear me going back and forth between the two, I don't know what to call him. But he said Tim to me, so I'm going to call him Tim. However, the nameplate on his desk said Timmy.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah. There we go. But there's a good chance Dr. Jackson bought the nameplate, so we don't know.
That's good investigation right there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some fun Zach Weaver stuff for you guys.
Okay.
You posted the photo of you guys there, and the first thing I noticed, because I'm a shoe guy, is Tim's shoes. He's got Jordan 11s on in this photo, and I'm like, I like those shoes. I have a pair of those just like that. And I was very excited. That's the silliest thing, I know, but...
I wish we heard more from him during the episode. It was like, we talked all day, but it was like when the mics came on, he wasn't, you know, he just didn't seem too comfortable talking a whole lot, but super duper good guy and just a huge heart on him. Like,
great.
Like he's just a great guy. And Dr. Jackson's amazing, the work they're doing there. It's really cool. And I'm hoping that we are able to cover that case. We've got a couple other ones that we're looking at, but that's the one that... And that was the one I think I'd mentioned in last week's follow-up that of over 100 case submissions that Erica had went through, that was one of two that she had selected that she thought looked like passed the screening and looked like they were actually innocent. And it was one that I had screened prior to this last year and also thought the same thing. So it seems to be a good one. I do want to, for Chris in the YouTube chat, she wants to do a shout-out, which I'm happy to do that for you, Chris. Happy birthday to Owen tomorrow. He's 20.
Happy birthday, Owen. Happy 20th.
Hey, yeah. Happy birthday, buddy.
Yeah. Hopefully he listens. So what do you guys think?
I thought it was great. I definitely, you know, I could listen to people talk about this kind of thing forever, and yet I really feel my shoulders like tensing up and everything kind of getting, you know what I mean? You just get into that mode where you're like clenching your fists, like, oh, when it comes to things like, there's just a lot of, I mean, look, it's the work that you're doing. It's the work that we're lucky enough to be a part of in some way, is that it's just really hard to just get a clean win on anything. So when you're hearing stories about people who are wrongfully convicted having to sort of audition for funds that have been set up, it's like, oh, it's so great that this program is being initiated. But to Dr. Nikki's point, like, really? They have to go and like prove themselves, even though it's already been proven that, you know what I mean? It's just
that,
that's
that
what the tryout was like. You know, you're just like, oh, why can't it just be a win? Like, why does it have to be hard and bad?
And also, we know how difficult it is to get a judge or a panel of judges to overturn a conviction.
Yeah.
And then, like, the way this law is written, it's like, well, now you have to come prove to us you're innocent. Like, a judge already heard the case and already decided they were innocent.
Exactly.
You know, the thing that she said that I've never thought about, but the idea that if you are guilty and leaving prison, there is a reentry program to help you reestablish. But if you're not guilty and you get exonerated, they just dump you out and there's nothing to help you.
It's extraordinarily unfair.
And, oh, it's so unfair.
And most, you know, especially the wheels of justice turn so slowly. You know, Tim's case, he was very obviously innocent and was rightfully, you know, the conviction was overturned. Still spent over 20 years in prison. Like, it's just a slow process. So the likelihood that someone after that amount of time has, you know, is lucky enough and blessed enough as like Ed Aides, who had like his family to go back to, the likelihood that that's still the situation is not high. And so, yeah, you come out with no support system and you wonder why, you know, recidivism. I think I said that right.
I think I do think you.
So
got
I
that.
Even I and I don't know these numbers, but I would have to imagine that even for people that are truly innocent, that are truly, you know, exonerated based on actual innocence, they come out with like nothing, no resources, no help, no support system. I can see how they end up finding their way right back.
Sure, absolutely. I also wanted to just acknowledge the fact that what they're doing in that program is already so hard and it's so much work. And then when you pile fundraising on top of that, that's its own full-time job. So the fact that you're doing the work and you're in charge of finding the money to do the work is obviously, we sort of have a version of that here in this podcast, but it just kind of blew my mind to imagine like taking all of that on. That's just a lot. It's a lot. So I was even more impressed.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard too, especially because like our audience, we have so many like good people who want to help in so many ways, but like people are stretched thin and there's so many, you know, places where like how many places can you donate to to help? And there's so many deserving, you know, they're like, I'm hoping that a lot of you, you know, went to their website and put a little donation in to help them out, because it's an amazing program. And I know like they're about to lose their space. Like they're renting out that particular space at the university, and they're trying to find a new space to move into because they're losing that space. Like, you know, and it would be a shame if they weren't able to continue with that work.
Oh, for sure.
This episode brought something up for me, a question, and I can't be the only one that wants an answer to this. And it's kind of silly, but we hear about the Reed technique a lot. Mm-hmm. I've heard about it for years, and I understand that it's an interrogation technique. But I don't fully understand why, like what the Reed technique is, first of all, and why it's so successful or how it's operated. And I say successful because obviously it also garners wrongful convictions and wrongful. Is there anything you can tell me to kind of lay that out for me?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since I've like thoroughly studied to give the exact steps, but essentially it's more than just an interrogation technique. You heard me mention in this episode, like it literally if you ever want to read the textbooks right out there on the bookshelf. Like it literally like says in the first chapter, like the Reed technique is psychological warfare. So it is a technique designed for when you're interviewing somebody to get them to confess.
Okay.
And it was never, like I said, like Reed, who wrote the book, has said like it's not being used properly. And he sees now or at some point saw like there's negative effects because it's so effective at getting people to confess that people confess to things that they didn't actually do.
Yeah.
And it's a series of, and it's everything from your body language to the positioning of your body to the method. So it's, you know, you start off in your the first phase is interview, not interrogation. It's interview and it's rapport building. So if we sit down and I'm interviewing you, I suspect you in a crime, I'm going to be very friendly with you. I'm going to try to find, I'm going to ask you questions that are not to do with the crime itself, anything that's going to put you on guard. I'm trying to take you off your guard.
Okay.
During the beginning phases. And I'm trying to find ways to connect with you so that you feel comfortable with me, right? So I'm asking you questions about your life and about your past and your history, just having a conversation. It's almost like when you're doing a podcast interview. Like you heard some of that, like when I was talking to Dr. Jackson. Well, probably like Erica does a really good job editing, and you didn't hear that, but there's, you know, when people sit in front of a microphone, you know, they'll kind of turn to the microphone and they'll say, did I say that right? Did I do this? And what I'm always trying to get people to do is I want you to forget about the microphone and just have a conversation. And then I think you kind of heard that probably when we were talking about the re-technique and things, there got to be a point in there where I was able to accomplish that, where she kind of forgot that we were being recorded and we were just talking.
Yeah.
And that's what so that's kind of what the re-technique is trying to do too, right? So you're trying to get to the point where you're comfortable with me. Now you're not being interrogated. We're just having a conversation. I'm really paying attention to the things you're saying, things I can pick up on, that I can let you know that I kind of, you know, we have a connection there. You know, like, oh, you know, yeah, women, you know, I've got a wife too. And she does, you know, things, you know, whatever the thing is, right? So it starts with that rapport building, interviewing, and then you start off even like your body language, like you sit a little ways away from them. I mean, it has to do with like the angles of the chairs in the room, even.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so you kind of start back and get comfortable. And then you start to say, okay, I want you to just tell me about your night. And you ask very open-ended questions. And what I want you to do is I want you to get a story on the record. Mm-hmm. I want you to commit to something.
Mm-hmm.
And I've led you down a path to where you feel like you need to. So like, even if you don't necessarily remember specific details, you're going to try to connect some dots and put together a story for me because you just feel like that's what you're supposed to do right now. So once I get you to put something out there, now I have a timeline to work with. Now I've got something that you put in there. Now I start to move in and I start to shift into interrogation mode. What I'm hoping for is that you've said something that's inconsistent or that's inaccurate. And then this is also where the Supreme Court ruling that says I can lie to you comes into effect. So, you know, you say, you know, I was never there, but I think you were there. But the story you told me, you were never at this scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I might say something like, well, I mean, well, we left something out, right? Because you went to the scene. Like, no, I never went there. Well, I mean, we know you went there because we have CC, right. You know, we've got surveillance footage of you being there. And I'm supposed to be, you know, and if I'm doing this legitimately, right, I'm looking for your reaction to that. You know, I'm like is he like getting really nervous or is he like getting like, no, what are you, that's impossible. You know, they can't be because I wasn't there. But if I do find like real inaccuracies in something that you're saying, then I start to move in. I start to move my chair closer to you and I start to ask more questions and I start to push in on that. And then you start to really apply the pressure to them. And so as you're applying more pressure to them and you're pushing them on these issues and you're getting a little bit accusatory, but not coming right out and accusing them, I'm scooting closer and closer. It literally says in the book at some point that you should touch them. My knee should touch your knee. Mm. I'm that close to you, right? Because it just makes them very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you get real close to the point where your knee touches their knee. You're right in their face. You're not screaming and yelling at them, but you're being pretty harsh with them. And you're like, listen, you're lying to me. I know you lied to me. You get them so they're on the ropes and then you back off and then you offer them a way out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've ever watched like interrogations, like there's a great show. It used to be on Oxygen. It's probably on Hulu or something called Criminal Confessions.
Mm-hmm.
I love that show because it's like the whole show is like watching real life interrogations. And you can watch like different police officers from different municipalities from all over the country doing the exact same thing. Like they're all doing the read technique. But then you kind of back out and then you offer them an out. Like maybe, you know, maybe it was an accident. You know, maybe, you know, these things happen. Look, I've got, you know, your wife.
Women.
Women. We get to arguing with each other. And, you know, and sometimes you say, you know, maybe she just fell down or whatever. What I'm trying to get you to do is put yourself there. And I'm doing it in a way where I'm offering you a way out. Now you can say, okay, I was there, but she just fell down the stairs. But now you don't realize, now you're fucked because you just told me that you weren't there at all. And now you've admitted I was there when she died. And also, because of the way the psychological warfare of this works, it's very possible that you weren't there, but you're just like, you're so off guard. You're so upset and thrown off by the fact that now they're calling you in these lies. They think you murdered this person. And then he says, look, I don't think you murdered her. She probably just fell down the stairs. And then you're like, you know what? That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Like if that's whatever's going to be not make me be a murderer right now. Sure. She fell down the stairs. But now I'm like, now we move back in. Now we move back in. Now you've told me, I already know you were there. Well, I was. You just said you were there. You said she was there when she died. We know from the physical evidence that there was bruising on her, whatever the thing is. And you keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And then you back off again. And you back off again. You give them that out. And now you touch them again. But this time it's not knee to knee. Now I'm going to put my hand on their knee. I'm going to put my hand on their shoulder. Be like, listen, it's all right, man.
Yeah.
It's all right. And it says in the textbook that when done right, typically your confession will come in the fourth hour of interrogation. It's that specific.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. So like that's the technique. And obviously there's a lot more to that. I might've got some things wrong in there about the exact sequences, but it's like that.
So you're really pushing like an emotional roller coaster on them, right?
Yeah.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I don't remember how long the Reid technique has been around, and I don't remember, in all honesty, like the breakdown of Jesse Miskelly's interview, but a lot of what you're saying, we've come across this in a lot of different interviews that we listen to, we've actually had access to or that we've had transcripts for, but that's an example of, I don't know if they are like full court Reid technique, but a lot of what you just said is so familiar. It's like, well, we know you were there. And so now that we've got you there, now we're going to put you in. And now that we got you in it, we're going to put you. And so that like it's that feels very familiar, right? Is that just walking you a little closer all the way?
You're just taking a little chip away at a time. But now.
Well, it seems extremely dangerous with like leading questions, too. You would have to be very careful.
Well, and that's right. And it talks about that in the book, too, is exactly how and when to do that. But also, the thing you have to remember is when the technique was designed, it was designed to get a guilty person to confess to the crime.
Right.
So what you hear, and like Jesse, which if you go back to, I don't remember what episode number it is, but in season 5, you know, I played the full Jesse Ms. Kelly interview where we like broke it down piece by piece. And I think it's a really good one to listen to if you want to hear about, you know, how an interview works and how they're led down to a wrongful conviction. That one is like they start with the Reed technique, and a lot of it was happening before it was recorded, but they went way off script. Like because they were just saying, you know, they were completely leading him, like, oh, it was down there and who did this? And, you know, and you know, they were planting all this information. Like, you know, one of the things I remember when you listen to Jesse Ms. Kelly's interview is like, if you separate just his words out of it, I don't remember the numbers, but it's something crazy. Like Jesse says the words like, yeah, or yes. Like 100 times, like the police and they're are saying the everything. Narrative.
They're testifying to what happened.
And that's not Reed technique. Yeah. That's not how
you're right.
Work.
You're right.
So it looks like season 5, episode 23, 24, and 25 are all about Ms. Kelly's confessions.
Okay. Yeah. And one of those is the one where we actually play, because I think I had Tim Clementi come on to talk about it a little bit.
He's on 24, and then the 25 is the final word on the confession. So maybe that's when we break it down.
Yeah.
But that's what made me think about the leading confessions when she brought up Jesse and Ms. Kelly, because I know in his interrogation, they say something along the lines of like, what'd you tie the boys up with?
Right.
Yeah. Then they, they're really hand feeding.
And that is not Reed technique. Right. That's not how they're supposed to do it. Cause the whole idea is you're trying to get them to share information with you. And that's like when you do like a statement analysis on a confession, right? What you're listening for is, what did they tell me that I didn't already know? What new information did they give me? And is it information that only the killer would know? Is there any other source that they could have? So you're hoping, and that's why a lot of times with cases, why the police will, you know, they won't put out certain information to hold stuff back. And that's why, because if they get a confession, they want to be able to know, well, the only way that he could have known that is if he was there and did it, because we've never shared that with anyone.
Right.
As long as there's sources, you know, if you go back to the Richard Allen case, you know, with the bullet and the white van and stuff like that. The reason like we have those questions out there is because we know that that information was out there and accessible to the interviewer before that stuff happened. So you can't know that that came from him.
Right.
So that's a long, it's worth a read. I'm sure there's like YouTube videos and stuff out there where they like people really break it down, but it's a process like that. It's a very specific process on how to get somebody to confess to a crime.
Which then takes us to you guys touching again on this idea of just saying you want a lawyer and asking, am I free to go? And the whole sort of conversation around what exactly is custody? What is custody when the police have you? And I can hear it a million times and I still get so uncomfortable imagining having to do that with the cops. So again, I will never question people who are like, I was trying to help. I didn't, you know, because it's going to be, it would be so hard. Because, you know, they'd be like, why do you want a lawyer? Like all of that just turns my stomach. Like, no wonder you like have to rehearse it with your kids and stuff, because you have to be so confident being able to say like, I know I'm innocent. You're going to think I'm guilty because I'm saying I want a lawyer, but lawyer, I'm leaving.
Yeah. Like, and especially knowing like what we just explained, like that's what's coming.
Yeah.
If you have that conversation, that's what's coming. That's why you have to say, am I free to go? If I'm not, then I want a lawyer. And that's it. And it goes, especially like innocent people are the worst, because the innocent person is like, no, what could possibly come bad out of this? Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything. So I'm more than happy to. And like another thing, when you watch that criminal confessions, if you do that, watch that show or any kind of interrogations like that, you'll see, of course, those are always shot right from the cop's perspective, right? So at the end of the day, they get the guy to confess to the crime, you know, and you know, the police win the day and justice is served. But you'll hear those you'll hear those discussions. You know, they'll like step out of the interrogation room and like, oh, we got to be careful. He's going to ask for a lawyer. We don't want to have a lawyer. And then they'll ask for a lawyer. And then the tactics they use to try to convince you. And it's so crazy when I talked about this conversation I had with an actual cop recently about that. And it's like, you really feel like they're doing a disservice by saying, you understand that is their constitutional. They're not doing anything wrong by saying, I want an attorney. It is your job to prove them guilty through evidence. It is not their job to yap to you to just make it easy on you. You know, and that sucks if like somebody's actually guilty of a crime and you want to be caught. But if that's the case, especially in modern days with modern technology and DNA testing and MBAC and all this stuff that we have, like, if they did it, you should be able to prove they did it, you know, one way or another, without having to get them to confess, because I just don't trust confessions. I don't.
You know, it's funny you said that with just modern technology. There is a case here locally, not a murder. It was a robbery case. They caught somebody robbing a gas station, and there was all these robbery, a chain of robberies that happened, and they were able to use his GPS in his car to prove that he was at every one of those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. GPS in cars, phones, DNA, fingerprints, like they're, you know, I mean, anymore, how many houses do you think are in your neighborhood that don't have a Ring doorbell cam?
Oh, every single one of them, sure.
Yeah, like it's so, like it's I would think it's a lot harder to get away with a crime now than it was even 20 years ago.
It would have to be. I mean, it has to be.
Yeah.
And yet, somehow, what, people still look at
the, there's a comedian named John Mulaney that has that bit where he says, as long as you're not there when the cops arrive, you could have got away.
Yeah, pretty much that's it back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I was just having a discussion with my students today, one of the case from the missing person case from up in Benton Harbor.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Stephen Kraft case.
Yeah. We were breaking down that, and we were starting to kind of profile it and figure out. So he had went walking with his dogs, and we were like pulling up aerial imagery. And I noticed that there's like the last house he was at, there's a road that comes up to it right from Red Arrow Highway. And we start thinking through like how... Like if he just crossed that backyard into that road, he's in a different world. Like we went to street view and like from this side, there's a wall here, but there's a whole different world on the other side on that road. And then we start thinking like, why would he be back there? And it was kind of a cool process. I'm getting to a point back to what we're talking about, but just the process was kind of neat because we started talking through it. We're like, well, why did he go to his friend's house when he had his dogs with him, a German Shepherd and another dog, and who abducts a kid that has two big dogs with him? He's very close to his dogs. He's walking his dogs. And then one of the girls, Lexi, was like, well, you know, like I take my dogs for a walk and stop them. I just tie the dogs up outside. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, the dogs got away.
Yeah.
Like no one, we never thought about that. We're like, why would he have not gone home? Why would he have gone outside of this street that he was on? What would get him out into the woods or out onto that road or anywhere else? Like, what if he tied his dogs out when he went and knocked on that door and the dogs got away and he's out looking for the dogs? So anyway, that was just kind of part of the cool, like we're working the kind of that angle now. Okay, that explains why he would have left that street. But we start thinking about then too, if this had happened today, we probably would have been able to track his movement because it's a type of neighborhood where there's small houses that are right up close to the road. So like if you have a Ring camera, it's going to pick up everybody walking down the sidewalk back and forth, like all the different options for like video, because they were asking like, is there any like highway cameras or anything like that? Like nothing we can get now, but like, back then, if it was now, this never would have happened. It would have been on video all over the place.
For sure. But that actually kind of brings up the painful experience that we all had when you were trying to do some good and get some missing persons cases information out there. Still, people seemingly disappear without a trace.
And, every day. Yeah.
You know, Jordan asks, like, are there any updates that you can add? You know, most of the time it seems like as things have come out in the news, we've sort of tried to touch on them if there were cases that we had taken a look at. Is there anything else like that?
There was the one, the Native American, I know Eagle was in his name, I can't remember.
In Arizona, I think, right?
Yeah.
It was in Minnesota.
Oh, it was in Minnesota. There was someone Arizona.
He was found deceased. We found Kaylana Turner. Of course, she was found deceased. Alex Jackson, the one out of Maine, is still, I meant to go back to that and I haven't, but that's one I haven't heard anything about a trial, and I'm friends with his sister on Facebook now, and I haven't seen anything about a trial or anything, and that's been quite a while, so I don't know what's going on with that one. But yeah, anything that we've been, that we covered where there were, you know, any new updates, we've tried to share those with you guys.
Yeah.
Nothing's been good. No one's been found safe and sound.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus, Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Kathy says, I love what Nikki's doing. Can we put her and Jesse, other Jesse, in touch when he gets out? He had some concerns that we don't even consider, and he has a great idea to help transition people. Listening to Nikki, I realized that Jesse's plans could really help transition people from prison to home. So maybe that's a conversation that we can all help and be a part of, this idea of, you know, people, because it often does take one person who spearheads something that then builds into a community or builds into a nonprofit.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, Jesse's in Texas, and like we have one of our listeners, Danielle Rohrer. She works for an org, or did at least, I think she still does, work for an organization that helps with transitioning people out of prison. She's actually was responsible for getting Ed hooked up with his truck when he got out. But yeah, for sure. And on that note, by the way, we were talking about it in the Patreon pregame, but I'm still trying to figure out. So I don't know what I got coming for you on Sunday, but there's updates coming in cases. Jesse's is one of them that hopefully we'll be able to share soon. But all I'll tell you this is fingers crossed, things are looking up with Jesse's case, and I'm desperately hoping and am more confident than ever that in 2025 that Jesse will finally be coming home. I really hope that's true.
Oof.
And as soon as we can, you know, have all the details and we can share all the details, we'll do that. But things are looking up for Jesse, which is really cool, because that came, you know, that was right after I shared that bonus episode on Christmas with him, which is, I was really bummed out thinking about Jesse that day. And then it was like a couple of days later, it's like, oh, things are happening. Things are happening. This is good.
That's really, really exciting. Well, we're all very eager to hear more about that. So fingers crossed. Yeah. You know, Denise also had a comment. Just finished listening. I'm in tears. I'm saddened that Timmy hasn't received any of his compensation. I live in Indiana. Basically, Denise is going to do everything she can to help get him paid. But she also says, when Dr. Jackson said that officers in police training went up to Timmy to shake his hand, she said, that speaks volumes to me. Wow, just wow. And that really was such an amazing part of the conversation, is imagining, first of all, the bravery that it takes to be someone like Tim, who has had the experience he has, and then is willing to participate. And, you know, Dr. Nikki used the term re-traumatize and re-victimize several times throughout the podcast. It's clear she's extremely protective of him, which I thought was wonderful. Yeah, the idea that you're kind of going into the, certainly not the exact place, because as she said, like, that's not happening, but going anywhere where, you know, for you, a uniform represents decades of being locked up for something you didn't do, and having the courage to be a part of trying to change the way that that process can work, and the way people think about how to arrest and who to arrest and how to profile and who to profile and not to profile and all of that kind of stuff, is really inspiring and kind of mind-blowing.
And I can't stress enough, like, just what an amazing, genuine person Tim is. Like, there was a moment in the podcast, and I'm sure it didn't come across in the audio, but, you know, where he kind of thanked me at the end. That was like, I'm sitting there talking to Dr. Jackson, and he was choked up. and like he had reached across the table and grabbed my hand and shook my, like, so that little moment where you hear him saying thank you for what you're doing, like that was in the room, that was a very heartfelt emotional moment that choked us both up.
Yeah,
when that,
I heard it. I felt that absolutely. No, it was beautiful. It was really cool. Another quick question from, you know, we talked about going back to this idea of obviously it's okay for police officers to lie and so forth. But Sarah does say, what are the consequences if police lie to minors in Indiana? Would any confessions obtained from the lie be disallowed at trial? Do you know?
I don't know enough about, like, I didn't know that was the case until Dr. Jackson shared it with me that she was a part of, that legislation went through and she was a part of it. My fear with it is, my hope is that legislation has teeth. Because what I always say, so if you guys remember back to the Jennifer Jeffley case, you know, like them denying, I don't remember the ins and outs of it, but like they clearly violated the law by denying her access to her mother. She was 15 years old while they were interrogating for all those hours. And her mom had like clearly called and said she wanted to be there and they denied. Like they had we discovered like through that, they absolutely had violated the law in doing that. But then what we found out was there were no, in the legislation, there was no consequences for it.
Right.
It didn't mean the confession didn't stand. It didn't mean that anything was undone. It didn't mean that anything was thrown out. It was just, so essentially the
empty
law
empty words.
Like, yeah. The law is essentially saying you shouldn't do this. And that was it.
Yeah. That's, yeah, I think about...
So I'm hoping that's not the case in Indiana. Yeah. I do not know if... My thoughts would be if it's clearly in there that says you cannot lie to... If it's very specific, you can't do that with a minor, then I would like to hope that then the consequence for doing so would be that the entire interview, interrogation, confession would be thrown out.
Yeah. Well, that's why, because the states are so different one from the other, you really see the need for people like Nikki and for people who are doing appellate work, where they have to make it their business to become experts in every letter of the law of a very, very specific state, because it's just so wildly different from one to the other.
I can't find a punishment.
And that's what's so important about it too, about them not being able to. So when we talked about like the Reid technique and false confessions, like for the people, I know most of our audience doesn't think this way, but think like that would never happen to me. I could never falsely confess. You cannot fathom the power of being, go through that whole process that I was talking to with Zach about a little bit ago. And you're just, your nerves are fried. You're terrified. You, and then it's another reason, like a big thing that they like to use is a polygraph. Come take a polygraph. And then you'll go take a polygraph and it doesn't matter what the polygraph says, because what they're going to do is bring you in there and tell you, you just failed that polygraph. And if you don't think that when they put you in a position where they tell you, and now this is as grown adults without any mental deficiencies at all, and they're telling you, you failed that polygraph, we know for a fact that you're lying. And then they pull back and they put their hand on your knee, like, but it's okay, because it was probably an accident. Mm-hmm. And you don't think that you would be like, it was an accident, like whatever, because you're just like, I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, they have science, right, that says I did it.
Or get me the out of here. Get me out of here. I have to get out of here. Nothing matters. They are saying I can leave. If I say I did this, they're saying I can leave. That is, they are making it seem like I can fight this later. I can fight this later.
Right. Yeah. Just get me out of here for now. Yeah.
I have no doubt. I've said it many times. I have no doubt that I would falsely confess. No doubt.
And then
at all.
take those same principles and that same thing, like lying to someone saying you failed a polygraph, or saying we have your fingerprints on the scene, or saying we have your DNA on a scene when you really don't. And then say that to a 12-year-old, you know, or even a 16-year-old that's terrified. It's absolutely going to get somebody to confess whether they did it or not.
Here's my concern is looking through this. It says the bill says any statements made by a juvenile during interrogation are admissible in court if the juvenile was knowingly lied to by police, unless certain exceptions apply.
Ew, that could mean anything. Fill in the blank.
Hopefully there's a very strict list of those exceptions.
I doubt it.
But it also doesn't sound like there is punishment. It just sounds like...
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's not really punishment, but it sounds like in order for it to be admissible, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. So
it sounds to me like they're saying in order for it to be admissible, just give us a good reason and we'll give it a pass.
Right.
Certain exceptions apply. It's like an invitation to be like, just explain it well. We really
thought they did it.
Okay, you're okay then. That's going to go ahead and hold.
Okay, I'm good then? Right.
Yeah, that's the thing that scares me for sure. People are definitely always interested in what's going on with Jody. I know there's been some curiosity and information about Jody being moved, and everyone's hoping that they're doing okay and that hopefully it's a better situation. I don't know if you have like a current comment on that. I know some of our listeners are also kind of connecting in on that and trying to see Jody in person and be successfully seeing Jody in person.
Yeah, so I'm having some, we just discovered this week, I thought Jody just hadn't written to me in a little while. But then I found out because one of our listeners, Teresa, lives, you know, close enough to the area where Jody's new new prison is at. And Teresa actually went and visited Jody. And she, if you're on the fan page, I think she put up a picture of her and Jody together. So it sounds like that's going well. I'll try to talk to Teresa at some point. I might put it into, but Teresa, she's in the chat right now, but you message me and I can share a little bit more, maybe in Sunday's episode, whatever that's going to be. I had a couple of interviews fall apart this week, so we're going to see how that goes. But yeah, but anyway, through those conversations, Jody like said, make sure Bob checks his JPay because I sent a message, and like I always check my JPay, and I haven't gotten a message from Jody since November 29th. So I don't know what's going on. Hmm. So we're trying to figure that out because I don't know what Jody's trying to tell me. Hopefully it's something important. As far as the case goes, all I can tell you is, you know, I really think that from my understanding, within the next couple of months, there should be some action. I think there should be some action pretty soon here. I'll tell you this. I'm holding off on doing some of the investigative work that I wanted to do for a couple months because that's what I was asked to do, to give some space for things to happen.
Got it.
So.
Got it. There was one last quick clarifying question from a different Sarah, just going back to the conversations that we've had in the past about the fire and some question around the timing of the fire. Sarah, I saved this. We can just touch on it really quickly. But I believe that we have established firmly that the house in question wasn't like 2 months later, the house burned.
We're talking about in Jody's case in the, so it was Victoria Miles' place and the fire was, I want to say it was like 6 months later, 8 months later. It was, there was, you know, the DeMario Lowe's murder happened in November and I think it was like April or May when they did like the sound test for the car at the house. Mm-hmm. And then I want to say it was a month or two or a couple of days after that, somewhere shortly after that in like the spring, early summer, when there was a fire upstairs. And then the trial was then in the fall after that. So it was between the time of when they did the sound test at the house and when the trial happened.
So while there isn't any indication necessarily overtly that the fire has anything at all to do with Jody's case, it's also understandable why, for example, Jody might have heard about it or thought, like, is there significance to that? Is there something that's being hidden? Like, you could sort of see how all of that information would get interpreted rightly or wrongly.
Well, I think, yeah, and I think that's another one of those things where if you're, you know, I think if you're looking at it objectively and trying to analyze the things that Jody's saying on the stand, that whole outburst when he's, you know, when they're on the stand going on about that, hear them say is they had the fire to burn the evidence and all that. Like to me, that just speaks to more that like Jody's grasping at straws.
Sure.
We know that what they had heard from other people in the jail was they had heard that it was Carvale Miles, who was Victoria's brother, that did it. And so, you know, it makes sense that it stood to reason to Jody that, okay, well, if her brother is the one that did it, and we don't know that's true, but that's what Jody was hearing. And then all of a sudden there's a fire. There must have been evidence in there. You know, it's grasping at straws, but at the same time, you can kind of see the how the mind is working from someone who is truly innocent and just desperately wants to know what happened.
Sure.
If for no other reason, so that they don't go to prison for something they didn't do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. And yet truly, like once you feel like you're being targeted by someone, I just feel like everything that had anything to do with that person, I would interpret as sketchy. Because I would feel so vulnerable and fragile about what was happening to me and how much that person might have had something to do with what was happening to me. So,
right.
Hopefully that helps answer the question, Sarah. And that is all I have from our Facebook post today.
Okay, great. We'll go ahead and wrap things up for here. schedule's going to be a little wonky for the next few weeks. We're going to be talking, Zach and Janet and I, offline in the next couple of days to figure out what's going to be like. Janet is, if you're in the San Francisco area, has Sketchfest going on for the next 3 weeks, which is a super lot of fun and a great show, but also requires every moment of Janet's time. So we're hoping we can make arrangements to still have all three of us on. Might be just me and Zach sometimes. Might be just me and Janet sometimes. Very unlikely that it'll be Zach and Janet and not me.
We've done it, though.
Truth and Just Us.
Yeah, Truth and Just Us. So that's going on. And again, like I mentioned, this Sunday's episode, we've got a couple things in the head. There are things happening where, like, we thought we were ready to, like, bring them out this week. And then we have lawyers going, we need to hold off, which is super fun when that happens on a Tuesday. It's like, oh, great. So I do have one of our listeners had suggested just a case, not a wrongful conviction case, but a case that they were interested in and wanted me to talk about. I'm going to see if I can turn that around. I have Super Erica coming in tomorrow and is going to be researching it and outlining that for me to see if we can try to turn that around into a scripted episode real quick. By Friday, got a couple other interview requests out. So not exactly sure what's coming on Sunday, but we will have something for you on Sunday. And at some point next week, we'll talk to you guys then. See you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.